hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Brandis Friedman is on assignment. Here's what we're looking at. Soaring temperatures and humidity hit the region. What you should know.
Are we ready for the school year to start?
Yeah!
Well, let's start the school year.
Classes start today for Chicago Public School students amid major changes to the district. And now that both parties' conventions have come to a close, what's next for Harris and Trump as they hit the campaign trail? And now to some of today's top stories. As you heard, first day of school for Chicago Public Schools as students across the city return into class.
I am so grateful that we are experiencing the second most popular day in the year, only second to Christmas Eve, and that's the first day of school. How about it?
Mayor Brandon Johnson also used the opportunity to renew his call for $1 billion more from the state. CPS says all classrooms have air conditioning and the district is ready to respond this week if weather issues arise. Students may have enjoyed the playground before the bell rang, but there's no outdoor recess or PE until at least Wednesday. We'll talk with the head of CPS later in the program. No gym for CPS outdoors because it is hot, hot, hot. The hottest it has been all summer. Humid, too. Tuesday's forecast set to have a heat index topping 115 degrees. An excessive heat warning is in effect through tomorrow night. Check out our website for a map of cooling centers in Chicago. 18 libraries across Illinois now offering legal help through a new pilot program. The Court Access Library Centers were established in partnership between the Secretary of State's office, the Illinois Supreme Court, and the Chicago Bar Foundation. Organizers say the selected libraries will offer space and equipment for residents without lawyers to appear in court remotely to obtain legal information and e-file court documents online. Librarians who volunteer will be trained to be court library navigators, and they'll be able to offer customized legal information. Up next, one-on-one with the leader of Chicago Public Schools on this first day for students. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Summer vacation is over for 300,000 or so Chicago Public School students. And as you just heard, yes, it is back to school, whether the district is ready or not. A bus driver shortage means some students are having a hard time getting to class. The district is grappling with a deficit, and the future of the district's CEO is uncertain. Now, here to help us clear that up is the CEO. That is Pedro Martinez. Thanks for joining us, and on such a busy day, because it wasn't just students returning to the classroom, you visited as well. What should families know about what's going to be different or what's in store for them this school year?
Yeah, Amanda, first of all, you know, I got to tell you, I'm so proud of my team. We were preparing, you know, our teachers came back last week. They're repairing their classrooms. We've been at it all summer, you know, getting ready for the first day of school. I was in several schools all over the city today, and I'll tell you, the schools look clean. There was, you know, the floors were spotless. The children were excited. Teachers were ready. So, you know, I just want parents to know we are going to have a hot day tomorrow. So we're going to continue our weather, you know, precautions tomorrow. So no gym, no outdoor, any outdoor activities. Every classroom does have at least a window air conditioner, including our older buildings. We have plenty of backups. We had a couple of buildings that we had a couple of issues. We got to them right away this morning. So we'll be on it for tomorrow.
So the kids should be at least somewhat cool, and they handle it better than we do, don't we?
Yes. Well, right. I mean, I went to school in CPS, you know, back in the 70s with no air conditioning. So, and a lot of parents and grandparents remember those years as well.
Remember those days. Now, there are some new students at CPS, about 9,000 enrolled from migrant families. How are they being supported this school year, and are there enough ESL teachers?
Yeah, so I mean, the great thing is, you know, we're up, you know, over 400, you know, new bilingual ESL teachers that are certified. In addition, our vacancy rate has never been lower for our bilingual teachers. In fact, it's lower than our district average. It's about 3.5%. Our district average right now is sitting about 4%, which is one of the lowest also we've seen. Over 90% of our students are in classrooms that receive ESL or bilingual support. The challenge we have is that, you know, our children start in shelters. So we're actually, in fact, been enrolling in shelters all week. And so when the families move, though, to temporary housing, sometimes they're moved to neighbors that don't have that programming. So we're working with the city on how to better coordinate that. But that's our biggest challenge. Even in those schools that we're providing additional support. And like I said, you know, it's not a large number of students, but that's where we have the biggest challenges.
Tracking those families, making sure that they're getting the continued education and other supports they need. Now, let's get to the big looming question, and that is, according to reporting by WBEZ, the Sun-Times, Chalkbeat, Mayor Brandon Johnson wants you out as CEO of CPS. Has he told you that?
So we haven't talked since any of those stories came out. I mean, I was with him all day today. I mean, we were in, you know, again, I was really happy that he came to welcome our children. We were both in a very good mood just because, again, the energy was so high. I'll tell you where the tension is, Amanda. So first of all, you know, there's never been better alignment between our district, our board, you know, the city, the mayor, and I would even argue the unions. We all know that our schools need to be fully resourced, and the challenge is they're not. And so here, you know, I am very proud of the work we've done. We are right now sitting on record gains in reading and math for 2 years in a row. We were number one in the country in reading recovery, number three in reading and math overall. My high schools are seeing record graduation rates, record college credits. Over half of our seniors last year were graduating with college credit. And over $2 billion with scholarships with a B that they're earning. It's still counting, by the way, breaking records every year. And so for me, you know, the work is, you know, speaks for itself. The challenge is that, you know, we're in the process of negotiating a contract. I want to protect the investments that we have. We have 2,000 more teachers today than we did, you know, pre-pandemic. And I'll tell you, I'm seeing it in classrooms, smaller class sizes. We have more elective teachers than ever. No more should we have a school without art, without music, without, you know, in fact, they'll even have a third option if they want a world language or a STEM program or a librarian. So again, you know, I think there's a lot of alignment there. The challenge is that, you know, we're being pushed to add even more investments. The resources are not there. Federal dollars are expiring. So I'll just tell you, Amanda, I'm an optimist. I'm a Chicago kid. You know, I grew up in Chicago. I know the politics. I'll roll with it. But I am focused on this school year, and I know, mark my words, Amanda, and I'll be back on this show, this will be our strongest school year ever. And so we set it up for that, and that's what I'm going to focus on.
You know, you said that you haven't spoken with him since those stories came out, at least in a real meeting. You were together today, but that's right. A different climate, of course. Have you talked with anyone else from the administration where you've received that sort of signal? Or when are you going to talk to the mayor?
I have not. And I talk to the mayor on a regular basis. We have a regular cadence of meetings.
When's the next one?
In the next couple of weeks. Like I said, we touch base every couple of weeks. And I'll tell you, the last meeting we had, which was before any of these stories came out, we were talking about how do we, you know, land on a contract with our teachers union? How do we work together to advocate, you know, more effectively with Springfield? And so it was a very productive conversation. So again, I'm going to continue to focus on the work because the work is speaking for itself. We're seeing the evidence. One of the things that I'm ready to do, Amanda, is to make a case to every elected official, whether it's a city, a state, or at the federal level, because we need all three. We need the city, we need the state, and the federal government.
COVID money running out.
COVID money's running out.
Money from the state. You've lobbied in Springfield.
We'll have a friend at the federal level, and we'll also hopefully, you know, continue to receive support at the city level, because we know that when we invest in our district, we show the result. And Amanda, we're not just outperforming, you know, just locally. We're outperforming in the nation right now.
You know, you talked about alignment with the mayor's office as well as with the Chicago Teachers Union. But I want to read a quote from the Chicago Teachers Union president, Stacey Davis Gates, who penned an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune today and basically said that if students succeed, it is in spite of you, writing that if the first day of school is a measure of performance of district leadership, then it should not be measured in how much it capitulates to the banks. It should be measured in how many teachers' assistants are missing, how many extra desks are pulled into our classrooms, how much mold and asbestos are left uncleaned, how little sports, arts, and music students are exposed to, and how much free labor teachers are expected to do to compensate for the lack of resources. What's your response?
So again, the work speaks for itself, Amanda. Since I've been here, I'm starting my fourth year. The stability, the morale has never been higher. Turnover has been the lowest that we've ever seen. We have more teachers in our classrooms, physically 600 more teachers this year alone compared to last year. Our schools now have elective teachers that they've never had before. Look, I'm a 70s and 80s kid. I remember what our schools never had. And I'll tell you, even when I came back, Amanda, the fact that we had hundreds of schools that never even had art education, again, coming from other districts where, again, it was taken for granted. So, look, I don't mind the push. I really don't, because at the end of the day, you know, I really believe that we all need to work on this together. We need to continue to make sure we advocate for more funding. I will be the first to tell you, as much progress as we're making, we need to sustain it, and we need to invest more in our schools.
Well, the CTU is asking for creative funding solutions from you. What does that mean?
I don't know, Amanda, but I'll say this. If we don't all join together and build a coalition, and this is, you know, myself, my team, our city officials, including, I mean, the amazing alder people that I work with, our state elected officials, our federal elected officials, if we don't build a coalition, you know, I see Chicago as a wonderful gem. Look at any other district in the Midwest. Look at our enrollment. You know, we expect our enrollment to be stable again this year. This is after decades of enrollment declines. When you go to our schools, I would challenge anybody, go to our classrooms. Look, the buildings need help, but when you go to our classrooms, you're going to see that we have hardworking teachers, smaller classes, especially in our high poverty areas. And like I said, the results speak for themselves, Amanda.
Is the mayor too close, though, to CTU, his former employer?
You know, I think that's a question for the mayor, but I will tell you, I have a lot of respect for the mayor. I really believe he cares about our kids, he cares about our district, and I'm going to continue to collaborate with him because I really, you know, I'm hopeful. I can't help it. I'm hopeful that with the alignment that we have, this is our chance to really change the narrative. It's a chance to really show people, you know, we're already, you know, we showed Chicago at the DNC last week. I want to show our wonderful district to everybody.
Now, in terms of back to school today, it was perhaps a great day for students, hopefully, but if they could get there, again, according to the Sun-Times here, nearly 20% of students with disabilities did not have reliable transportation to school this morning, and also trouble for those in selective enrollment schools that don't live near them. What is the status of that?
So let me give you a little more context. So, you know, transportation has been my most difficult challenge the last 3 years. This is the first year, Amanda, where we're seeing an increase in drivers, 25% increase. Almost 900 drivers, up from 700 last year. We could barely hit 700. So we're transporting more children than ever. Here's the challenge. We have more children now asking for service, and we did start with our student with disabilities. We had about, actually, I thought it was 1,800. We actually got it down to 1,100 that right now are on financial assistance. By the way, some of them by choice, but what we're trying to do is to put as many children on routes as possible, because even with families on financial assistance, the attendance is not always reliable. I get it. You know, my wife transports her children every single morning. It is not easy. And so we're going to...
Driver duty can take up hours.
Absolutely. I'm optimistic that this is going to be our strongest year ever with transportation. I'm even hoping, Amanda, that before the end of the first semester, we'll have some hubs for our general ed students. And that would be a game changer for us, because now we can start transporting general ed as well.
Hubs as in students going to one school, getting picked up from there and brought to another.
So you know, we couldn't transport general ed students last year. So what we want to do this year is pilot hubs in some of our high poverty areas and pick up general ed students to take them to their magnet schools.
Is any of this being impacted by the drivers who are organized by Teamsters Local 727 that are striking?
Here's the beauty. So we're getting close to 900 drivers even with that event happening. And so we're hopeful that that'll be resolved soon, and we'll even be able to add even more drivers.
And then in terms of this year, there is, of course, the strategic plan that was passed by the board that really is meant to uplift neighborhood schools. What's the update on that?
So first of all, you know, here's what's exciting. And this is where I say, Amanda, that there's so much alignment. Right now, when you look at our neighborhood schools, the amount of resources that they have, I mean, and again, please don't take my word for it. I will invite you to come to our schools. Come visit our classrooms. Now, the buildings will be old. There's a lot of needs on the facility side. But when you look at the rich programming, the electives that we have now, the fact that our high schools now offer college credit. I had 6,000 seniors last year that were in college classes while they were in high school. And these are the small high schools, Amanda. These are not Whitney Young. By the way, Whitney Young doesn't need to, because they have an amazing set of programming already. These are our smaller high schools. You know, we have some of the largest, you know, we had 4,000 more students taking advanced placement classes last year.
Those are the hard ones. Took some of those in my day.
And these are neighborhood schools, Amanda. So again, I want people to see it directly. My goal is to make sure that people understand it because we need to sustain these investments.
And we are out of time, but I want to have a quick, so therefore, yes or no, sorry. When you're looking at budget, because of course it may become a problem once the CTU contract is finalized, if it adds expenses. Once the moratorium is lifted, will school closures be on the table, yes or no?
Not under my leadership, Amanda. I really believe in investing in our neighborhoods, and I want to strengthen these schools.
Thank you so much for your time, and
thank you,
good luck to you on this first day and first week.
Yes, continuing on. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That, once again, CPS CEO Pedro Martinez up next. Harris and Trump hitting the campaign trail. What they need to do to convince voters. Coming up right after this. Chicago's getting back to normal now that the Democratic National Convention the city hosting is over. The race for the White House just heating up. Both presidential candidates are hitting the campaign trails hard. The Republican ticket of Donald Trump and running mate J.D. Vance set to visit several swing states this week, while the Democratic team of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are going on a bus tour of Georgia. Here to talk more about what we can expect are Karen Freeman Wilson, president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League, also former mayor of Gary, Indiana. And also Aaron Del Mar, the co-chair of the Illinois Republican Party. Thanks to each of you for joining. And actually, Aaron, I'm going to begin with you. We are fresh off the both conventions, really. But these are both events that are inspired to tell the party's story and their aspirations to the American people. But let's focus on the DNC as it is the most fresh. How did Democrats do?
Well, I thought it was, a very much a window dressing event. They had a lot of rah, rah, rah. The production value, even as a Republican, I got to say, was really great. The music, the vibe, it was cool to watch on television. But I felt like it was really light on actual policy and sharing what the true vision that Kamala Harris is going to have in the next 4 years and why it would be different than the last 4 years that we had.
All right, over to you. Give me your retort, please,
well,
Karen.
You know, I think that all conventions, DNC, RNC, are contemplated to really appeal to the base, to get people excited. But I think there were some clear policy statements, policy difference, certainly reproductive justice, common sense gun violence, issues relative to health, Medicaid, Medicare, also prescription drug costs. All of those were front and center at the convention. And then, of course, morality, truth, the importance of really accepting election results, all of those things were right in the convention.
Aaron, you sort of made a sound there when Karen said accepting election results. What do you mean by that?
I always think that there's certain Democratic talking points, and this, interview is no different. I think for us as Republicans, we came out of Milwaukee 100% united. I think that the American people kind of have a little bit of a short memory when they can forget that less than 2.5 months ago, there was an assassination attempt on Donald Trump. I think that people don't look at what's been happening as far as Vice President Harris not having any interviews, not answering any tough questions off the cuff. It's been a great opportunity for her to showcase some of her strengths, but she's not had the opportunity to be scrutinized by the press like Donald Trump has and J.D. Vance has. And I think it's going to show a lot more what the true grit that she has when those questions start getting answered.
So you want more transparency, more openness there. Now, something that would perhaps do that would be a debate. And there is a debate over whether a debate is going to happen. Much being made of this over whether apparently a microphone will be muted when the other candidate is speaking. So, Karen, first, your response here. Do they need to debate? And if so, Should those mics be up the whole time or not?
Absolutely, they need to debate. And I mean, you see that Vice President Harris is clear on her desire and willingness to debate. I think former President Trump has balked on debates, and that would be the hallmark of transparency, to have a debate, to have questions asked by reporters, to have the parties engage in a meaningful conversation about policy issues.
Aaron.
Yeah, I agree that a debate needs to happen. I would agree with Karen on that. They need an opportunity for the American people to compare and contrast both visions. And I think that what really needs to be answered is, in the last 4 years, is your life better than it was 4 years ago? And I can tell you that a lot of people are having trouble with that. You know, for her coming out without having being elected during a regular primary season and basically being anointed, all the polls are showing within the margin of error. So our country is really divided, and so I think the debate will give an opportunity for the American people to make a decision by themselves, you know, candidate versus candidate,
so
side by side.
I realize that you're not a strategist for either campaign, but what's the holdup then? You both want a debate. What's the holdup?
Well, I think, you know, at least from the Republican side, we just want to make sure that we have a very fair opportunity to make our point across. And I think the rules in how this debate is going to happen are going to be pinnacle, and I think it will happen. I think there might be some posturing going on right now, but I think it will happen on September 10th.
You too.
I'm looking forward to a September 10th debate. I think that it will be very telling. And, you know, muted mics, is that really the issue?
I'm looking forward to, evidently, September 11th, discussing that very issue, whatever, however it goes on this program. Now, as Aaron noted, it is set to be a very tight contest, no matter how this pans out.
Yes.
And Karen, the Chicago Urban League has a 100-day plan to help drive up voter education and registration, get out the vote. What does that entail?
Well, first, I want to be clear that the Chicago Urban League is totally nonpartisan. And so we believe that it's our duty to put the issues front and center of all voters and to get them to the polls. And that's really what our 100-day plan is about. Do you have a plan to vote? Do you know where you're supposed to vote? What happens if you're not available on election day? Can you vote ahead of time? Can you absentee vote? And why should you vote in the first place? Because there are a lot of people who don't think it really matters to them.
What do you say to them?
We say that every issue that you care about, whether it's how much your groceries cost or how much your medicine costs or whether or not your children get to understand the full course of history in school, is on that ballot.
Aaron, how about your Get Out the Vote plan as the Illinois GOP? And that also involves voter integrity efforts, correct?
Yeah, certainly. We had a big event earlier in the year that was going to be banking the vote, so we're going to be doing a ballot chase program that we're going to have here in Illinois. I mean, really, our concentration is going to be on state rep races. There's about six or seven that we've identified that we feel that we can pick up and try to make Illinois a two-party system again. We are in the super minority, both in the Senate and in the House, and that's kind of where we want to start moving our direction. We know that it's going to be a tough lift to win at the top of the ticket in the presidential election here in Illinois, that, you know, it probably is not going to happen, but we're still trying to make our inroads and trying to find places in suburban Cook County, you know, Lake County, and other areas where we feel that we can have some pickups and seats. And we feel like there might be one congressional seat. You know, Judge Joe McGraw down against Eric Sorensen is a pickup in the rural area of Western Illinois. And there's one Senate seat we think we can identify that we can pick up as well and make incremental change here on our side.
A state Senate seat, you mean, by the way. There.
Correct, state Senate seat.
And how do you respond, though, when you see so many former, even current Republicans, they call themselves, such as former Illinois Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger, saying that you can't back Harris, backing Harris, that is, saying that how do you claim to be a party that is patriotic if it, quote, idolizes a man who tried to overthrow a free election?
Well, I think former Congressman Kinzinger has his own agenda and what he wants to do. I think he likes to see himself on late night television and you know, and those types of things, and kind of make himself busted up. But I think if you look at what you see, Tulsi Gabbard, former Democratic congressman from Hawaii, has recently come out and endorsed Donald Trump. And more importantly, if you look at RFK Jr. coming out, taking himself out of the swing state election for a presidential office and then going in endorsing Trump, when you have a history of that strong Democratic family and that background, and seeing him join kind of our side of the aisle, I think that needs to be recognized and maybe look into it. Oh, that's definitely worth at least a 3 or 4 point swing, depending on the state that you're in. One thing that you look at now is that in these swing states, it's not going to be Illinois that decides who wins president. That's not going to happen. It's the 5 or 6 swing states with all within the margin of error that are going to be going back and forth. So what we're telling our people is, if you want to help us, let's go up to Wisconsin or let's go into Michigan and start knocking on doors there.
A lot of Democrats doing that as well, I know, going to these more battleground turfs. What impact does this RFK endorsing Trump in those states have?
I think it's a non-issue. His own family has disavowed him. And at the end of the day, people want to hear about what are you going to do to make my life better, and who's willing to put people over party. And I think that's what you heard at the DNC, that this has really little to do with party and everything to do with people.
Well, thank you. That is going to be our ending note for this particular discussion. We thank you so much, Karen Freeman-Wilson, and also Aaron Del Mar. Thanks.
Thank you.
That is our show for this Monday night. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. And you can get Chicago Tonight streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and on our website. Please join us tomorrow night as well, 5:30 and at 10. And now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a great night. See you tomorrow.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm dedicated to preserving the dignity and rights of all individuals.